It was getting late. I had prepared dinner, but he wasn't home yet. I figured, well, he's probably working overtime. He'll be coming soon. And sometimes on a Thursday or a Friday or whatever, sometimes he would go and shoot pool after work with the guys and sometimes come home like a little later. He was your typical 18, 19-year-old. And this Thursday, it was getting late. It was around 11:40. My phone rang. Joe's dad, his name is Bob, he and I had been divorced for years, for maybe 14 years at that time. The boys still saw their dad, but I didn't talk to Bob that often. But the phone rang. It was their dad. And he said, Adrian. And I said, you know, he said, our beautiful baby boy is gone.
Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. This is Mark. Since 2015, I've written a weekly newspaper column about unsolved homicides and crime for the Claremont Sun in Ohio. Before discussing this week's episode, I would like to take a minute and ask for your support. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me one $5 cup of coffee every month. This will help cover expenses that go with producing a successful podcast. If you can help, please visit my website at catchmykiller.com and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And if you cannot donate to the podcast, you can still help by sharing these stories with your friends and families through word of mouth and social media. Many of these cases could be solved if the right person would provide a crucial tip. I would also like to give a shout out to Griselle this week for her donation. Thank you for your financial support. I truly appreciate it. And that's enough of the coffee business. This week's tragic story involves the homicide of a 19-year-old Maryland man named Joseph Miranda. Joseph entered life back on Earth Day in 1987, and this was significant because Joseph had a green thumb and was known for his love of animals. After graduating from high school in 2005, 19-year-old Joseph took a job with a local landscaping company called Outside Unlimited. He decided to temporarily forego college and just work through the summer. He wanted to become a landscaping architect. Joseph did well and was promoted to foreman within months of starting. On July 20th, 2006, Joseph left home early and said goodbye to his mother, Adrian Miranda. She had no idea it would be the last time she would ever see her beloved son alive again. After arriving home from work that evening, Adrian was surprised when she came home to an empty house. Usually Joseph would be home by now, but she had just assumed that he was probably out with some friends. But her life changed forever when she received a call from Joseph's father, Bob, at 11 o'clock that night. He had horrible news. Joseph was killed in an accident at his job. Adrian then also received a call from the Maryland State Police notifying her that Joseph had died around 3:30 p.m. that afternoon. According to the Baltimore Sun, police learned that near the end of Joseph's shift on July 20th, he was given a task that required the use of a bobcat. A coworker told him that he needed to finish a project that he was working on before turning over the bobcat to Joseph. The coworker said Joseph tried to remove the driver and jumped onto one of the wheels of the bobcat, slipped and fell, and then was ran over. Although there were different witness accounts, several witnesses have claimed that Joseph and his coworker had a disagreement over the bobcat. This led to coworker Paul Godwin becoming angry and shoving Joseph, who then fell and was then killed by the bobcat. Godwin would end up giving several different accounts of what happened to Joseph on that day. In one version, he claimed they were just playing around and Joseph was accidentally killed. Joseph's mother, Adrian, told Dateline that she does not believe her son just slipped off the machine to his death. The Maryland State Police would rule Joseph's death an accident, and this didn't sit well with Adrian. According to her, it was physically impossible with the way Joseph was laying for him to have fallen off the front of the machine. Although no criminal charges were ever filed against Godwin, Adrian vowed to fight for her son. She began her own investigation into the matter. Eventually, she learned that a state medical examiner named Dr. Ali had received additional evidence about the case and ruled the case a homicide. He contacted law enforcement and then wrote, "As the death was caused by the action of another person, the manner of death is best reclassified as a homicide." However, the state's attorney for Baltimore County, Scott Schellenberger, said, "There will be no further inquiry, no arrest, no grand jury, no trial, no criminal charges in Joseph's death." This was after he had received notice of the case being reclassified as a homicide. Adrian also provided me with the following statement. In the police report, Paul Godwin claims there was a pushing contest, but she says that's bullshit. Joseph was drinking a Dr. Pepper soda. He didn't push or assault anyone. Paul Godwin didn't have a mark on him. Also in his deposition, Godwin says, "There wasn't pushing. I gave Joe the 1-2, like that of a boxing motion. But it wasn't really extreme or violent, just a little bit." Well, it was violent enough to take Joe's life and kill him. Anyone knowingly pushing or punching someone into a 7,600-pound oncoming moving tractor knows that person will end up dead. Adrienne has told me that she will fight for justice for her son for the rest of her life. And now on with the story of Joseph Miranda, as told by his mother, Adrienne. This is the first part of 3 episodes. Part 2 will be available next Sunday, and then the conclusion the following Monday.
I have 2 boys. Joseph was my youngest, and he was born on April 22nd, 1987. He loved the outdoors, animals, and he just took to nature. He had a lot of friends, was very popular, and he was very loving, and he loved all of his family. And in the summers, he worked for retail outlets in landscaping, different garden centers and things like that. So there was one right across the street from us called Watson's. I live in Baltimore County. We live in Baltimore County, Lutherville, Timonium, Maryland. He got summer jobs there and he really liked it. And he could tell you the name of any plant, tree, shrub. He got to learn a lot. He did landscaping and he really had a knack for it. He went to Austin High School and graduated in 2006. And he had always said to me, "Mom, I really do like landscaping." And he said, "I think I want to become a landscaping architect." That was his aspiration, commercial properties and things like that. And he said, "I know you want me to go to college, but what I'd like to do is get my hands dirty, work with an actual landscaping company and make sure that's what I want to do." And so his resume was good. He had a lot of qualifications and different things. So he sent his resume out to a couple places, and then he got an interview with this company called Outside Unlimited, which is about 25 minutes away from where we live. And they were what I thought was a mid-sized landscaping company. They had maybe 175 employees. So he come home and he told me they offered him the job, and they said, "Joe, you can work on either the commercial side or the residential side." He said, "I want to work on the commercial side," because he thought he would learn more. So he started there at Outside Unlimited, Inc. And within the year, he had gotten 2 promotions. He started entry level, and then they made him an assistant foreman, and then a foreman. So the last 3-4 months, he certainly had his project managers and supervisors, but he had his own crew. A lot of people would say, "Joseph's a quick study. He's talented, he's creative." He was happy. I remember when he got the promotion, you might see his big smile. He was excited about it, and I was very happy for him. Joseph had lots of friends. I remember at the funeral, I never knew Joseph knew so many people. Hundreds of people came to honor my son. But what happened, was July 20th, 2006. It was a Thursday. And that morning, he would get up early. They start early in the morning. Sometimes at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. So he would get up early for work. And sometimes before he was going out the door, I would be getting up for work. That morning, he said, "I love you, Mom." I said, "I love you too, sweetheart." And I never laid eyes on my son again after that. I went off to work and I probably got home around 6 o'clock. And Joseph would get home usually around 5:30, 6 o'clock. Sometimes he would work a little later, because sometimes they would work overtime, depending on what job they had the next day. And we had cell phones and all, and he had every one of my contact numbers on his personnel file, my cell phone, my work phone, my home.
Unfortunately, by this time, Adrian would have no idea that her beloved son, Joseph Miranda, had already died 2.5 hours before she had arrived home from work.
It was getting late. I had prepared dinner, but he wasn't home yet. I figured, well, he's probably working overtime. He'll be coming soon. And sometimes on a Thursday or a Friday or whatever, sometimes he would go and shoot pool after work with the guys and sometimes come home like a little later. He was your typical 18, 19 year old. And this Thursday, it was getting late. It was around 11:40. My phone rang. Joe's dad, his name is Bob, he and I had been divorced for years, for maybe 14 years at that time. The boys still saw their dad, but I didn't talk to Bob that often. But the phone rang. It was their dad. And he said, Adrian. And I said, yeah, he said, our beautiful baby boy is gone. And his voice was quivering. And I said, what did you say? He said, Joseph, he's gone. He was killed at work today. I was in shock. I said, killed? What are you saying, Bob? I said, what do you mean he was killed at work? I said, was he shot? What happened to him? What? He said, I really don't know. He said, I don't know. He said something about a industrial piece of equipment. A bobcat ran over him and killed him. I dropped to the floor. I started screaming and crying. I was in total shock. I just started screaming and crying. You know, I dropped the phone. It was horrible. And I couldn't really control the pain and the agony. And then I grabbed his picture and held it to my heart. And I went to call my mom. And my mom said, Adrian, I'm coming, sweetheart, because I was alone. And I was just praying and crying and screaming. And I held Joseph's picture and I saw headlights. It was my mom. And she came in, and then my sister, and then his brother, Rob, Joe's brother, and then his dad came, and the lady he was living with at the time, Sherry, and then my friend Matt, who is a cop, you know, who's a family friend, he came. They were all just, you know, and so many of Joseph's friends, they were all here and just trying to console me. They were all crying. I was so overwhelmed with sadness and heartache. And my phone rang, and it was a police officer from the Maryland State Police. And his name was Corporal David Kitzinger. I think my sister might have answered, and he asked for me, and you know, I got on the phone. He said, Miss Miranda, he said, yeah, he said, this is Corporal David Kitzinger with the Maryland State Police. And he said, yeah, your son was killed at work. And I said, I don't understand what happened. I said, what happened to my child? And he said, we don't really know yet. He was run over by a bobcat, an earth-moving piece of equipment, and he was killed. He said, it is a criminal investigation, and we're looking into it. And I said, well, who was it? He said, well, we can't release any names yet. And I said, why did it take you so long to call us? Because I said, what time did this happen? He said, about 3:30 in the afternoon. I said, well, why did it take till almost midnight? I just thought 8 hours? Why did it take so long for you to contact us? He didn't answer me. And I said, well, where's my son? I need to go see my child. I want to go hold my baby. He said, no, you can't. I said, no, I have to go hold my child. I said, where is my child? And he said, can you put someone else on the phone? My sister got on the phone, and my sister was saying, what did happen? We've seen bobcats before. I ended up doing so much research, and I seen the bobcat model G873. I learned so much, and it's 6 feet long, 4 feet wide, but it's 7,600 pounds of steel. Cage is open in the front. It's all open in the front. It only has, you know, it's room for one person, sit low in it. I said at the time, my sister was saying, we're not understanding any of this. And she said, my sister wants to see her son. And he kept saying no. And then Matt got on the phone, who's a Baltimore County police officer. He got on the phone and he said, he did ask him first. He said, why did it take you so long to call? And he still didn't answer. He never really provided an answer. He said, you're going to need to explain more. He said, because he said, he knew about bobcats. And he said, I'm not understanding any of this. He said, they're open in the front. He said, how could somebody run over Joseph. You know, Joseph's 5'11". It's broad daylight. How could the driver not see my son? He said, well, Miss Miranda does want to go see her child. And he was telling Matt, she can't go see her child. And the injuries are just too bad. And she just needs to remember her son. And then Matt just said, put me back on the phone. And then he said, Miss Miranda, you just need to remember your son the way he was. And I remember when the next day came, you want to try to feel like maybe you're in a nightmare. This isn't really happening, but you don't know how to accept it. Matt said, Adrian, we're going to find out. We're going to find out more. I remember the next day, my sister said, you're going to have to think about making the arrangements. You're going to have to think about in a day or two, like going to pick out a coffin. And, you know, and actually, my sister, I mean, family had been through this before because my sister lost her son, Michael, 7 years before Joseph was killed. He was also killed at the age of 19. Michael and Joseph were close. I call them our angel boys. They're together in heaven. My sister helped me and Bob, and we knew he would be buried at Ruck's Funeral Home, which is right here in Towson. It's where other family members were buried. I was not even able to hold my child or see my child or just never see him again. He walked out that morning. I never laid eyes on him again. And then I remember the next day, July 21st, it was a Friday because Joseph was killed on a Thursday. And I got a call from the owner of the company. His name is Joe Medved, Joseph Patrick Medved. He was the owner of Outside Unlimited, Inc. He called. He said to me, Miss Miranda, I'm very sorry. He wanted to offer his condolences. I'm very sorry about Joseph, and we're very sorry what happened. And I said, what did happen? What did happen to my son? He said, I really don't know. He said, all I know is it involved a bobcat, and we don't really know. And he said, I wanted to tell you that we're going to pay for everything, the funeral, and we're going to have a wake for Joseph. And then he kept saying, he was saying things like, we're going to have a bell made, put Joseph's inscription on it and ring it at noon. He said, Joseph was like loved and we're so sorry. I said, well, thank you for your generosity. And I just still can't understand what happened to my son. And he said, well, he said, we're going to take care of everything. And then he said, I want to give you my phone numbers. I said, if you ever need anything at all, anything, please call me. So we got off the phone, but it felt like a strange conversation. It just felt weird. And then a little later in the day, the vice president, he called and wanted to offer his condolences. And he said that he was very sorry. He said that Joseph was very talented. He was a quick study, and they're very sorry. And he didn't really know what happened either. And then I remember Rux had called the funeral home. They just said, Miss Miranda, they said, we tried, but you're going to have a closed casket. I said, thank you for trying. And then my close friends and family and all, they put together these beautiful picture boards and everything. Joseph, since he was a baby, since he was an infant, throughout his life, and he loved the beach, he loved surfing. He was always drawn to the water since he was a child. In high school, he wrestled. He was very quick and agile. He was an award-winning wrestler in high school. And they played, of course, sports, soccer and baseball and all different sports when they were growing up. But he really became an avid wrestler. So my son, Rob, his brother, put together this beautiful montage of like pictures from when Joe was an infant till right before he died, and all of Joe's like favorite songs. Like, it was beautiful. And then I had to pick out what my son was going to wear. And what am I going to bury my son in? And then I remember the first day that we had the viewing, I guess you want to say viewing, but it wasn't really a viewing because we had a closed casket, but so many people came and just showed such love and tears were flowing everywhere. And then the owner, Joseph Medved, and the vice president, they came with their wives, and it was so crowded. But Mr. Medved, Joe Medved, he gets up and he comes over to Bob and I, and he hands us a business card. And he says, I just want to tell you, it was just an accident, and all my employees have their green card. And then he just sat back down. And Bob and I just looked at each other. It was just completely unsolicited by us. But here it is, the first night of I'm receiving people for the death of my child. And he says that? Who's asking him about green cards, immigration, or anything like that? And he already knows it's an accident. They're telling me it's a criminal investigation. It's a MOSH card. MOSH is the Maryland Occupation of Safety and Health. MOSH. It's like OSHA is the federal level, and they're the people that, you know, have compliance officers that go to different workplaces and make sure everything's in safety compliance. We were just like, what? And I still have the card. Brian Timberlake is the man's name. So we had a funeral mass. But as far as Joseph, that Corporal Kitzner called me maybe 2 weeks after the funeral. He said to me that he was going to set up a meeting, and yeah, he was going to ask us to come to the Westminster Barrack because it was the Maryland State Police that were processing the case. And he said, I want you to bring a picture of Joseph and so I can get to know who Joseph was. And he said, and we'll go over, you know, what we can go over. And I said, okay. I said, do you know anymore? All we know is that they're telling us that the Bobcat went forward over your son and killed him. And it was the driver. There was a spotter. Explain what a spotter was. I kind of knew. If a truck's coming back at the end of the day from work, they're doing something like in the roadway, you know, like loading dirt, unloading it or whatever. He would maybe stop the truck so there's a clear way to make it clear so the truck can get through to not get in the way of them dumping dirt kind of thing. Like it's a safety position. He said it was just the driver and a spotter, and they still couldn't release names, but was a criminal investigation, and they were trying to find out exactly what happened. I said, but I want to know what happened to my child. My son's life was taken, and I want to know how. He said, okay. And he said, I understand. We went up to, this was like August 15th. My son was killed on July 20th, so this was a couple weeks, and he set it up for August 15th. And I remember, so we went, and it's in Westminster. So we go up to the barrack, and we meet with this Corporal David Kitzinger. And we sit down with him. He's trying to tell us what he knows. So he just says that it is an ongoing criminal investigation, and all they know right now is the only people that they know who really saw it or were there on that road was the driver and the spotter and your son. And your son was found on his stomach underneath the Bobcat, and face, head, and neck were crushed by the rear tire, the left rear tire. And I brought him the picture of Joseph. I said, here's a picture of my son like you asked for. And we said, you're saying Joseph was underneath the Bobcat on his stomach? He said, yeah. And I was like, do you mean completely underneath, like underneath the center of the Bobcat? He said, yes. So my sister and I are looking at each other, and Bob, we're like, well, if you're saying that the Bobcat went forward, how would my son be on his stomach underneath the Bobcat? He's showing us like he's trying to say his legs were sticking out like the back of it. We're like, something doesn't really make sense. Something isn't adding up here. It just isn't making sense. So we just said, is there a way, Corporal Kitzinger, that you could bring us a picture and somehow block Joseph out? Because we couldn't look at the horror of what happened to Joe. At least show us Bobcat and like how Joe lay underneath. And he said, yeah, I can do that. So he did. And he brought back a picture so we could at least see the tires. And he said, okay, your son is on his stomach. Here's the Bobcat. Your son is laying on his stomach, on the road, on his stomach, and underneath the center of the Bobcat. Your son's legs are sticking out, just sticking out like the back on the ground, sticking out the back. His left arm is bent at his elbow and his hand up. And he said, and the left rear tire is behind your son's left elbow next to his armpit and like where his ribs are at the left side. And we're saying, okay, if that's how my son, the last position that my son is in, how can you say the Bobcat went forward? If the Bobcat was going forward, it wouldn't be behind my son's left shoulder. The last movement, if it was forward, the tire would be in front of my son. It's just physics. It wasn't making sense. What he was telling us was not adding up at all. So he said, I don't really know. We said, were there a lot of photographs taken? He said, yeah, there were. He said, we're still investigating. And I said to him, I said, Corpo, I said, did anyone touch my son, punch my son, push my son? He said, no. And I said, how do you know? He said, because I asked. Please ask again. This isn't adding up. So he said, okay. He said, I'll ask again. And when we were there, I remember he got a call. He said, he told us that Moosh had come to investigate on the day Joseph was killed. And he said, they left a message. And he said, I'll play the message for you. You can hear the message. Because he said, they did tell me that they didn't care whether we released the names or not. So we can release the names. I said, okay. So he played the message, and it was basically someone from Moosh saying that they're done with their investigation. They think it's an accident, and they didn't care if they released the names or not of the two people that were there on the day my son was killed. So he said that the driver's name is Antonio Rubio, and the spotter is Paul Godwin. So we had the names, and I said, what do you know about them? He said, I just know that they did talk to the driver and the spotter that day when Joseph was killed, and they asked him questions separately. They never took him into a police barrack, a room, they just talked to him outside on the property of Outside Unlimited separately. So he said that Paul Godwin was the same age as Joe, 19, Caucasian, 19. He was the spotter, and Antonio Rubio, I think he was maybe 44 or whatever, and he was the Hispanic driver. So anyway, I did ask again, that was my last thing to anybody, push my son, whatever. He said that he would.
At the time of this meeting, Adrian never realized how much the name Paul Godwin would cause so much grief and pain to her and her family, because she later learned Godwin was the man responsible for killing her son.
As we left, I remember him saying, sometimes these cases are never solved. And I thought that was a strange thing to say that early on. I said, well, I believe we're in good hands, and I think you'll solve this. Then as time went on, this Corporal Kitzinger, we ended up learning that he only had about 3 years of experience as a homicide detective. When they had senior detectives, they had senior homicide detectives, but they put him on my son's case. There was another trooper, Stephen Hudako, that arrived, who was good. I think he was a good officer. And I say that because it ends up that a lot of officers arrived, a lot of officers and different people. But I remember when we first started learning more, they said that on the day my son was killed, the Baltimore County Police arrived and the Maryland State Police arrived. And the property, this man, Joseph Medved, has 90 acres there where the offices are. Offices and they grow some trees and different things. And there's a pond on the property and things. And he has a great big stone mansion, on that road, St. Paul Road, where he lives. And that was also where the offices were. So his property where he lived and the offices had the same address, 4195 St. Paul Road. And then, there were bays in the back that were garages and things like that. And it was a relatively 175 employees. And then the driver, when they had interviewed Antonio Rubio, he said, he called Joseph Jose. And he said, Jose was a good guy. He said, in the morning sometimes, because this Medved would house them, house the Mexican workers in different properties that he owned, because he owned a lot of properties. He would house them in this one red brick house that was maybe 3 or 4 miles on Reisterstown Road, which is Route 30, which is right where we're Outside Unlimited is off of, right off of that main Route 30 in Hampstead, Maryland. So we left Corporal Kitzinger, and like I said, he said he would ask again about the pushing or shoving. And then when we left there, we definitely felt something's not right here. with how Joseph lay under the bobcat and what he's saying. It doesn't add up. It's not making any sense. And they were processing Joseph's case as a criminal investigation. That's what they kept telling us, a criminal investigation. We found out they took 91 crime scene photographs, and Trooper Hudako took some of them. Corporal Kitzinger took some of them, and another detective or whatever. So they had 91 crime scene photographs. But this Trooper Hudako, he was the first one at the scene. So when the Baltimore County police arrived, and remember, we found this out as time went on, but when the Baltimore County police arrived on that day and the Maryland State Police arrived, the county line between Baltimore County and Carroll County runs right through that property, the 90 acres that Joe Medved owns there. And the owner was saying that Joseph was killed on the Carroll County side. So the Carroll County side would be the Maryland State Police. Like, they didn't have a Carroll County police. And Carroll County, the Maryland State Police were the ones that processed everything in Carroll County. Like, as far as burglaries, crime, homicides, like, it was the Maryland State Police. So Trooper Stephen Hudako, he says, I think the young man is in Baltimore County. And the owner of the company said, no, he's not. I know my property, and he's in Carroll County. He lays in Carroll County. So the Baltimore County Police and the Maryland State Police just listened to him, and the Baltimore County Police left. So the Maryland State Police processed the crime scene. They didn't even do a GPS to see what county it was. That's basic 101. They just listened to the owner. My son was killed in Baltimore County. I had to have a survey done and everything. My son wasn't killed in Carroll County. And that man had no authority whatsoever to determine the jurisdiction of my son's death. None. But they let him. It ended up that as time went on, Corporal Kitzinger would keep me updated, and he would just say, well, we're still working the case. We're still questioning people. And when we have more information that I can release to you, I will. And then I said, okay. I said, do you feel like you're getting anywhere? He said, yeah, I do. I feel like we're making some progress. I said, okay. So it was November 1st, Corporal Kitzinger, I think we're ready to make an arrest. He said, I can't get into too many details, but that's where we are. So that was good news to us. We said, okay. Then time went on, and I wasn't hearing anything from Corporal Kitzinger. He wasn't communicating with me. I would try to call him. He wouldn't answer my phone calls or messages or emails. So I thought, this is strange. A month went by, 6 weeks, and here's he telling me they're going to make an arrest, and he's not following up with me. So anyway, I called the barrack. I asked to speak to the commander of the barrack. This Lieutenant Dean Richardson got on the phone. I introduced myself, and I said, Lieutenant Richardson, I said, are you familiar with my son's case? And he said, no. I said, really? I said, it's a homicide investigation. I was told an arrest was going to be made. I said, aren't you typically aware of cases like that, like in your barrack? He said, yes, I am. He said, but I'm not aware of your son's case. And he said, can I call you back? I said, yes. After about an hour or so, he called me back and he apologized. And he said, I did look into it and got a lot of information. He said, I don't really know why I wasn't aware of it. He said, but, and I said, well, do you know why Corporal Kitzinger isn't following up with me? And he said they were going to make an arrest. He said, no, I am not really sure. Said, I have to look into this further. But he said, Ms. Miranda, he said, I would like to be the liaison between you and us. So I'm going to give you my information and my email address, and you can communicate through me as far as any updates and how the case is progressing. So anyway, time was going on, and Lieutenant Richardson was a little vague. We emailed and different things, and he would just say that they're trying to talk to even some more people and some of the Mexican workers that were there that day who might have seen something. And they're talking more to Paul Godwin and the driver. And he said that we're making progress. So he said he would meet with us and answer any of the questions that we had, because he knew I had a lot of questions. I had an attorney at that point, Jay Miller. He was very well known in Baltimore County. And I was with him for a while. I ended up not using him I ended up getting another attorney, a fellow named Craig Miller, who was interested in the case. And he said, it certainly sounds like a serious case. See, on the day my son was killed, they never brought in a reconstructionist. And I wondered why. My son was killed on a road by a vehicle, and the Maryland State Police do reconstructions all day, every day on the roads throughout our state. Why didn't they bring in a reconstruction for my son? And they couldn't answer me. Don't you think that's a valid question?
Sure it is.
So anyway, Dr. Ali, who's the medical examiner who did the autopsy on Joseph, he had said it was an accident because the Maryland State Police, while they had 91 photographs of the crime scene, and they said it was a criminal investigation, sent the paperwork to the medical examiner saying it was an accident and sent them one photograph, only one, of the 91. Why? So obviously you can see red flags are flying all over the place. So we all meet with family and goes again, all my family, and now Craig is coming with me too to this meeting with the Maryland State Police. So Craig, since they didn't do a reconstruction, he had to write to them before we had the meeting. He said, I need to see the pictures of what happened, how Mr. Miranda laid, how he was, the position he was in adjacent to the Bobcat. And because there wasn't a reconstruction done, said, I have to look at the pictures so I know what I'm looking at and have my own reconstruction. So we go to the meeting, we walk into the Westminster Barrack. Then Lieutenant Richardson and some other men that were in like another office, they called Craig into their room and they said, we're going to be a couple minutes. He went into the room and they closed the door. And then they opened the door. Then Lieutenant Richardson said, okay, we can go into the conference room now. So we go into the meeting and my son took a tape recorder. I had said to my son, I want to ask if we can tape the meeting. My son said, Mom, let me ask. Lieutenant Richardson, he opened up the meeting. He said, "'Tis an ongoing criminal investigation." So then my son said, do you mind if we record the meeting? He said, no. So we have it recorded. Craig introduced himself as the attorney. And then Craig asked, he said, he did want to know why they never brought in a reconstructionist. And they just never really answered us. They just didn't have an answer. They didn't know why. And I said, you keep talking about Moshe. And I said, Moshe came like late on the day my son was killed. Like you called a Moshe office from West Virginia. I said, that's 3 hours away. And they said, well, it's the Hagerstown office. I said, right, the Hagerstown office. I said, Hagerstown is 2 hours away. I said, and the man who came lived in West Virginia, even though he worked out of that office. And it took him hours and hours to get there. And my son was like laid under that machine, under that Bobcat for 4 hours. And I said, why did you call that office? I said, I read on the Moshe site, it's their policy. In a catastrophic event, the closest Moshe office is to be called. And there's a Moshe office 25 minutes away from Outside Unlimited. And they just looked at me like wide-eyed. And they just said, well, we really don't know. Like sometimes you just go to a region that you think is the closest. I said, you think is the closest office? I said, you do your work based on what you think? I don't understand. I said, why wouldn't you at least look into the procedure that, okay, we have to call the closest Moshe office. I said, why would you bring somebody that far away? And they didn't answer. And I said, you're saying that the Bobcat went forward, and from what we understand and according to what Corporal Kitzinger, when you showed us, I said, it's only physics that where the back tire, the left rear tire is behind my son's left armpit. I said, that would only indicate that it was a backup motion. And all they kept saying is, we can't discuss it. It's an ongoing criminal investigation. And they were trying to tell us, like Craig was saying, you won't allow me to see any pictures of the crime scene. You won't allow me to see any of the police statements of anything like that. And they said, no, we won't. That meeting that they took Craig in was where they told him, no matter what you wrote, no matter what you requested, you can't see anything. It's an ongoing criminal investigation. That's all they kept saying was it's an ongoing criminal investigation. and you can't know anything. It was just like they were just so, like, just putting us off. They really just wouldn't answer any of our questions. We left, and then I was communicating by email with Lieutenant Dean Richardson, who seemed very kind at the time, compassionate, like he did want to help us, and I believe that he did. It ended up that after more time went on, there wasn't any arrest made or anything like that. They had called us into the Carroll County courthouse, and they said that they were going to meet with us. And the prosecutor in Carroll County at the time was Jerry Barnes. So I remember when we opened the meeting, I said, I had heard Brian Timberlake was the motion compliance officer that went on the scene. They had ended up taking the Bobcat and just lifted it. They did lift it off of my son. And I had learned that this Brian Timberlake didn't get to the scene until about 7:45 at night. My son was killed like about 3:30, quarter of four in the afternoon, and he didn't get there till almost 8 o'clock. So it took him almost 4 hours to get there. It's, I guess, rush hour traffic. Plus he's coming from West Virginia because he lives in West Virginia. And I said, why did you send somebody from West Virginia? And they said, well, he was the only one available. This Roger Campbell said he was the only one available at the time. He works out of the Hagerstown office, but he lives in West Virginia, which is just adjacent to Hagerstown. West Virginia is a state adjacent to Hagerstown, Maryland, and Cumberland, Hagerstown, West Virginia. But anyway, so he says he was the only one available at the time. So that's why he went. And I said, we're all here today at this meeting. Where is Mr. Timberlake? Why isn't Brian Timberlake here, the one who responded to the scene? And they said, we knew you would have the most questions for him, so that's why he's not here. How weird is that? How like blatantly weird is that? We all just looked at each other. What? And they said, well, he doesn't even really know what a Bobcat is. So I said, well, then why send him? And it was just so stupid. And then I said, well, we got from these papers here, and they're all employees of Outside Unlimited. You can see what it says on the top. And the names are all whited out, and they're all Hispanic names. Why did you white them out? Why are they whited out? What's the reason for this? And the Chris DiTullio is like, what do you mean? And then this assistant attorney general, this Catherine Winfrey, she says, they're just social security numbers. I said, no, they're not social security numbers. So I said, here. I said, and I took the papers to her, and I walked across like the table, and I said, here, look at them. You can see their names. So she looks at them and she is like embarrassed. And she just said, no, I still think they're numbers. I said, they're not numbers. I said, why are you saying that? So then the comptroller, the friend, like the man who was thought something was all up with this, Mr. Klossmeyer, he says, let me look at them. So he looks at them and he says, clearly they're names. And they just said, we don't know why they are. So anyway, again, I just said, I don't really understand Moshe's place in all of this, except that Brian Timberlake, you're saying, is a compliance officer and is a safety compliance. And they were supposed to go and to see that the Bobcat that was involved was in safe and good working condition, that everything as far as the engine, the backup alarm, the arm was moving properly, and all that was in safety compliance, right? Isn't that correct? They said, yes. I said, well, did Mr. Timberlake do that? And they're saying, we think he did. I said, you think he did? I said, don't you have his report? Don't you have his? And it ended up that it was just such a bogus meeting. And it ended up, we ended up deposing everybody, but Brian Timberlake, who was the Moshe compliance officer that went there. When he got there, he looked at the Bobcat. And this Corporal Kitzinger, who was there, said he never touched it. He never touched the Bobcat. All he did was look at it. I ended up getting everything because I exercised my Freedom of Information Act rights. But anyway, it ended up that this Brian Timberlake went, got there around like quarter of eight. The Bobcat was there that was involved. And rather than getting in it, turning it on, or checking it and all that, all he did was walk around it. And he just said, well, the owner, Joseph Medved, said it was fine. So I just took his word for it. Can you believe this? Do your jobs, for God's sakes. He just said, said he just listened. He just listened to the owner because he said, oh yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I know. So anyway, and even in deposition, like my lawyer even was like, Mr. Timberlake, are you kidding me? He goes, well, I don't know. I'm sorry. I just listened to Mr. Medved. We have all the depositions. I have everything. July 11th, a week before July 20th, that would have been a year anniversary of my son's death. The Maryland State Police said that they were going to have a meeting and they were going to bring me in and tell me where their decision is headed. And they were going to tell me what the state's attorney is thinking. And because I remember I had called the state's attorney's office once, this Jerry Barnes, who was in Carroll County, because that's what they had said there, that's where they had said my son was killed, in the Carroll County side. And he had an assistant. His name was David Daggett. The medical examiners, I had heard from this other attorney who was an affiliate of Jay Miller. And he had said to me, he had happened to call me, and he said, Miss Miranda, I do want to tell you something. And this was maybe 2 months prior to them having this meeting. He said, the medical examiners think your son's death is a homicide. And I said, the medical examiners do? And he said, yeah. He said, they do. And he said, I'm pretty sure that they're changing the death certificate. And I think they're changing it to undetermined with a strong possibility of homicide. His name was Lanaza. A nice man, Lanaza, and he had known that he had known about the case, and we did get some publicity with, you know, in the Baltimore Sun paper, the Towson Times, the local news channels, and so because they knew there was no way I was backing down, I was going to find out what happened to my son. We had met with Dr. Ali. My mom went, my sister went, Joe's dad went, and met with Dr. Ali, and Dr. Ali did say that yes. He did change it to undetermined with a strong possibility of homicide. And he said that what had happened was that more information came into him. And he's the one that told us that they had only sent one photograph. They had sent it coming in as an accident. When it was a criminal investigation, they found this out. And they found out because a good detective with the Maryland State Police, his name was Detective Richard Bechtel, had come to him in late October and said, Dr. Ali, he said, I'm bringing more photographs. He said, I did meet with the driver. I had my own reconstruction done. He said, and this is foul play. There's foul play here. And he showed Dr. Ali exactly how Joseph was laying, where the bobcat, like the back tire, was behind Joseph's left armpit. There was also undisturbed brain matter in front of my son's skull. That would again show you that it backed up. It didn't go forward. It was undisturbed brain matter. And my son had no broken bones below his neck at all. My son was already prone. He was already flat on his stomach on the ground when that vehicle backed up over him and crushed him to death. So how did my son get flat on the ground? So Dr. Ali had written a letter to David Daggett, to Jerry Barnes. He had written a letter to the state police saying it was undetermined but the strong possibility of homicide. He wanted further investigation. I had called David Daggett. I called Jerry Barnes to ask Jerry Barnes, like, where is he with things? Which is a normal thing to do. The state's attorney, could he please just... And David Daggett said, Mr. Barnes isn't in. And he said, I'm his assistant. And I said, Mr. Daggett, I said, can you please give me an update on where the state's attorney is with this? This was before the meeting, before that July 11th meeting. This was probably in May or June or something, and you know, way after I had heard from Dr. Ali, or maybe even April. So I remember, I'll never forget him saying to me, do you realize this company is afraid you're going to sue them for everything they've got? And I said, what? Who is saying anything about a lawsuit? I said, I am trying to find out, as I thought you were, and the state's attorney, of what happened to my child on July 20th on that road and what caused his death. Why are you talking about money and why are you so concerned about the financial disposition of Outside Unlimited? Why do you care about that? this isn't about that. This is about my son and my son's killing. And he said, we have the letter from Dr. Ali. I don't know what to tell you. Mr. Barnes isn't in. And he hung up. They just knew I wasn't going away. Don't mess with anybody's mother. Don't. That's my child. And I'm going to be his voice until I take my last breath and beyond. That is what's going to happen. My child deserves justice. He deserves to have his voice heard. He can't speak, and I'm going to speak for him.
And that concludes part one of the Joseph Miranda story. This case is so unusual. Paul Godwin has admitted to shoving Joseph Miranda into the Bobcat. However, he claims it was accidental, but the revised autopsy claims the killing was a homicide. It seems like a simple case to prosecute. For some reason, prosecutor Scott Schellenberger has refused to prosecute Godwin. If you would like to learn more about this story, please visit pleasedoyourjob.com and also consider signing a petition to get justice for Joseph. I will also provide this information in the story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form, or contact me directly through Facebook. Thank you for listening. Thank you.